For Jacob, it was a case of better late than never. During the 3 decades since he had encountered the Lord at the place that became known as Bethel, God's purpose was for Jacob to return to that place of meeting with God. Jacob had some vague intention to return to that place at some indeterminate point. When he finally felt compelled to leave Laban behind after 20 years spent in his employ, Jacob pursued the goal of returning to Bethel with something less than clearly focused intensity. But that it was always God's will for him to be there appears from the opening words of this chapter that we have already considered, where God said to him, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there." As Jacob sensed when he heard that command, to return to Bethel meant that his household would have to surrender its continuing fascination with the images that represented false worship. The idols that they had cherished for years in their midst while they were living in the land of Canaan would have to be given up. Jacob and his family would have to get beyond the half-hearted religion with which they contented themselves during the years that they lived in the neighborhood of Shechem. Yet they were about to learn the lesson as well, that serving the Lord with the whole heart is not an inoculation against difficult circumstances. Returning to Bethel would not mean that Jacob's problems would all end. Far from it. The reality of grief and mourning appeared vividly only when Jacob and his family return to the place of God's appointment for them. Serving the Lord with your life does not shield you from those circumstances that bring you sorrow, heartache, and grief. Returning to Bethel did not protect Jacob from added disorders in his family, as we will see in due course, as yet another of his sons demonstrated his instability and unworthiness to carry on the family's name. Jacob was learning the lesson that all of God's people must learn, that being in the will of God is not an antidote to the problems of life. Yet, in the midst of those problems, Jacob received at Bethel a fresh revelation from the Lord Himself that reemphasized the purpose of God that extended through the generations yet unborn. The promised seed was still going to come. Messiah would still descend from one of Jacob's sons And he would rise to be the king. So in the midst of all the griefs and other adversities, Jacob received at Bethel the sight of the glory that was going to come to his family, and through his family, to the nation and to the world. The family of Jacob journeyed from the environs of Shechem toward the place that was known at first as Luz. But in Jacob's soul, for 30 years, that place was Bethel, the house of God, the place where he met with God when he didn't even know God was there. And so it was that their journey was taking them back to the house of God. Back to the house of God. When the Lord brings you to the end of yourself, in the midst of your wayward tendencies, he designs to restore you to the place of meeting with God. When he brings his people to a week of special prayer, as he has this week here in this congregation, it is so that they may reflect that resolve to get back to the place of meeting with God, to have done with lesser things that distract them. But such a gracious intervention in our lives is not a guarantee that we shall never see troubles anymore. It is not a pledge that the days of mourning will never afflict us again. It is instead a demonstration of God's preserving grace, reminding his people of the true extent of his faithful mercy. There can be no doubt that we all need to hear the call to arise and to return to the house of God. It is the place of the mediator. It is the place of true communion with God in and through the person of the mediator. It is the place of the promise. It is the place for the building of the altar from which acceptable worship rises to the God of the altar. So let us take our places at Bethel, at the house of God, and contemplate all that it means to get back to the house of God. It ought to be our experience, really, every Lord's Day. When we come back to this place that God in his mercy and his providential care has set apart as the place where his people meet to worship him. Every time we come to worship, every time we gather here to engage in prayer, let us contemplate what it means to get back to the house of God. Now there are four things that we encounter when we return to the house of God. First, remembrance of past blessings. And we read of this remembrance in verse 6. So Jacob came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan, that is Bethel, he and all the people that were with him. And he built there an altar and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared unto him when he fled from the face of his brother. It had been 30 years. It had been 30 years since that happened. But it is evident that Jacob never lost sight of it in his mind. And he didn't lose sight either of the realization that when he came to that place that was called Luz 30 years before, and he lay down to sleep on the ground, he did not know that God was in that place. He awoke, you remember, and said, "Surely God was in this place, and I knew it not." The Lord appeared to him in that place in the form of that ladder that Jacob saw in his dream. That ladder that was set up on the earth and the top of it reached unto heaven. That ladder that we learn in the New Testament was a clear picture of the Lord Jesus Christ, on whom the angels of God ascend and descend. What was that ladder designed to convey to Jacob? Esau would not be able to kill him. Remember, that is why Jacob was there. The atmosphere that motivated Jacob at that time was the atmosphere of fear. Remember? He and his mother conspired together to deceive Isaac into bestowing the patriarchal blessing on Jacob instead of on Esau, who was the firstborn. And when Esau discovered the painful truth, and when he heard Isaac say, "Yea, and he shall be blessed," Esau vowed that once the days of mourning for Isaac were past, he would kill his brother. And it was that news that led Rebekah, Jacob's co-conspirator, to have Jacob flee from his home, to run away. And so Jacob left home in great anxiety, in great fear that Esau would overtake him. He had great anxiety. He couldn't put enough distance between himself and Esau. But God's appearance to Jacob at that place assured him that God would preserve him. And that became the basis for the oath that Jacob swore on that occasion, that if God would preserve him, if God would be with him, if God would bring him again to his father's house in peace, then God would be his God. Now, 30 years have passed. It's easy for us to think of it in terms of reading the story, 30 years, just like skipping from one verse to the next. But these were 30 years that were just the same as 30 years for us. Years that went by day after day. Now thinking back 30 years, Jacob was coming back to the place where all those memories of God's revelation to him flooded into his soul. So now he's back at Bethel, no doubt recognizing the very terrain in which he had been sleeping when this dream came to him. And there in that place, he led his family in an act of true worship. We read in verse 7, he built there an altar. And we may understand the nature of this altar because it was like other altars that the patriarchs built. And like the altars that would be built at God's command through Moses and through Aaron and others, these were altars that would be built without human contrivance. And they would be built for the purpose of shedding the blood of an atoning sacrifice. He built the altar. And he called the altar El Bethel. Literally, the God of the house of God. So here was the emphasis that Jacob was making here, that the blessings that would come to the people of God in this place are not so much from the place itself, not so much from the house of God, as from the God of the house of God. So it is when we come into this place, the blessings that we derive are not derived from the place itself. They are derived from the God who manifests himself in this place. Jacob could remember that God had appeared unto him when he didn't even know God was there. And he could reflect upon the blessings that had been his in all the years since that time. So, in the same fashion, when we make our periodic returns to this place that is for us, our Bethel, our house of God, we remember. We ought to remember every time God's mercy in the days that have gone by. In the days that have gone by in the past week, in the days that have gone by in the past month or the past half year or the past decade. The mercy of God. And we ought to remember as well the presence of God with us. So, the remembrance of past blessings, that is part of coming back to the house of God. But this remembrance, we read, became tinged with sorrow. For the second thing that we find in connection with getting back to the house of God is recognition of present trials. We come in verse 8 to read, "But Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried beneath Bethel under an oak, and the name of it was called Alam Baketh." It was the oak of weeping. So here in the midst of all the great joy in being back at the house of God, there comes a death. And it is not just any death. It is the death of the last link that Jacob had to his mother. Deborah was Rebekah's nurse. And we read of Deborah, not by name, but by implication, back in chapter 24. And verse 58. Abraham's servant has come to seek a bride for Isaac. We read in verse 58, "And they called Rebekah and said unto her, Wilt thou go with this man? And she said, I will go. And they sent away Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant, and his men." So that is where the nurse came. She came with Rebecca. She made that journey. So that when we read later in chapter 24 that Isaac went out into the fields to meditate at eventide, and behold, the camels were coming, Deborah was part of that caravan. She had come from the old country. She was older than Rebecca. Else how could she have been known as her nurse? Unless she was older than Rebecca. The implication is she had cared for Rebecca from her earliest days in the world. And she had survived Rebecca. She had gone with Jacob. In some way, she had been reunited with him. And she came to die here. It's the first of three deaths recorded in this chapter. Rachel would be the second. Isaac would be the third. So here, Jacob is back in the land and he's confronted with that which brings him sorrow. The death of Deborah reinforced for Jacob the thought that he had left his home 30 years before, scarcely realizing in the haste to flee that it meant he would never see his mother alive again in this world. Here was the only link that was left. It was the aged Deborah. And she came to die. Now when they were back at the house of God, now when they were back at the place of great blessing, death came. Serving the Lord often leads us through the veil of tears and stirs regrets of what can never be again. God designs for His people that in the midst of these trials, they learn what it is to rely more and more completely on Him and on the expression of His wisdom and His direction. The Lord was taking Jacob more and more away from all in this life on which he could rely. More and more, Jacob was becoming a man of faith in Jehovah alone. And that was important because there were other aspects of getting back to the house of God that were significant. And the third of these things is reassertion of prospective inheritance. The purpose of God had not died. We notice in verse 9, God appeared unto Jacob again and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Yes, Jacob, that's the name with which you were born. That was the character of your early days. But thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. That reinforced the experience that Jacob had, of which we read in chapter 32. Chapter 32, verse 26. And he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. The meeting there led to the change of the name. And here it is being reasserted. Thy name is not Jacob. Thy name is Israel. Thou hast power with God. So there was at Bethel the re-emphasis on what was the destiny of Jacob and his family. The restatement of what had been promised to Abraham and to Isaac. Notice that in verse 12. The land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. So here was the restatement again, that what God had promised to Abraham and to Isaac was still his purpose, that the land in which Jacob was living as a stranger, the land in which he would always be living in a tent, that was the land that God said he would give to Jacob's descendants forever. His name would be Israel. His name would signify one who, as a prince with God, has power with God. Was this to pay tribute to all of Jacob's spiritual dynamism? Not in the slightest. It was the testimony to the grace of God operating in Jacob's life. What was the Lord's word to him? Jacob, however trying the present circumstances appear to be to you, the purpose of God is going to come to pass. Now, I submit to you, is not this a blessing that comes to us when we get back to the house of God? When we look around us and we see that with what seems to be increasing speed, the civilization around us is rushing pell-mell to its own destruction. And when we consider that and we wonder what the future holds, we come back to the house of God. And what do we find in the house of God? God said, it doesn't matter how wicked the world is, my purposes will stand. Christ shall reign. The purpose of God would come to pass so that the Lord would say to Jacob in verse 11, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. That is, here was the warrant for the descendants of Jacob to have a fruitful heritage, a nation, and a company of nations shall be of thee. And kings shall come out of thy loins. So in the midst of reasserting this prospective inheritance, we come to the even sharper aspect of the restatement of this promise. And that is the fourth thing in the passage, revelation of the promised Redeemer. Here is what the Lord said to Jacob. Now that he is back at the house of God, the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac to thee, I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And of the identity of this seed of which the Lord spake to Jacob, there's no doubt. Turn to Galatians chapter 3. Galatians chapter 3. Verse 16. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He saith not, and to seeds as of many, but as of one, and to thy seed, which is Christ. Now, just as a side note there, the insistence upon the number in this verse is an indication of the extent of divine inspiration. God did not inspire just the ideas. He inspired the actual words. His inspiration extends to the words. He insists upon the singular here. Not to seeds as of many, but as to thy seed, as to one. And what was the importance of that? That is Christ. So in Genesis 35, when the Lord said, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land, that was a reference to the coming Redeemer. That was a reference to Christ. The promised seed was going to come. And of what character was he to be? Well, we notice it in verse 11. Kings shall come out of thy loins. There is no doubt that Jacob understood the significance of this statement, of this revelation. If you turn a few pages forward to a passage to which we will come in due course, Genesis chapter 49, verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Jacob was prophesying that Judah, from the descendants of Judah would come those who would bear the scepter, those who would be the kings. And from that line would come Shiloh, the person of the promised Messiah. Now, the promise that kings were going to come from Jacob's descendants has been the cause for critics who think they know enough to criticize the Bible to complain that this part of Genesis was obviously a later addition, because Moses could not have known about the kings that would arise in Israel. So how could he have written about it here? It must have been a later editor who put in this reference. But it was the revelation of God to Jacob concerning the coming of the promised seed. And it was the revelation that this promised seed who would come would not only redeem his people, but would then reign over his people forever and ever. The revelation that Jacob received, he understood. And the evidence is that as he came to the end of the days with a prophet's eye, he looked forward to see the rising of that promised seed who would be called Shiloh. Then we read here of the act of worship. After God had communed with Jacob, we read that Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he talked with him, even a pillar of stone. And he poured a drink offering thereon, and he poured oil thereon. These were acts of worship. And he called the name of the place Bethel. Jacob was reconsecrating this place by this act of worship. And his act of worship was meant to seal the significance of this place forever. Now I want you to think about the future history of the nation of Israel. Because a time would come when there would be a king over the 10 northern tribes of Israel named Jeroboam. And Jeroboam would set up 2 centers of false worship in the land of that northern kingdom of Israel. And one of those false centers would be way up in the north at Dan, and the other would be at the very south in Bethel, in the very place where Jacob had carried out this act of worship. The devil came in with his perversion and made it one of the centers of idolatry and apostasy in Israel. And that is to remind us again of the great truth that the place is not the protection. How many places there have been that have been used as houses of God, used as places of worship for God's people, that in later generations have been turned into places of apostasy. And I can think of church buildings right across this land that at one time resounded with the message of God's truth, and today do not. It is not the place that is the protection, but the God of the place. The God of Bethel is the one we must seek. He's the one on whom we must wait. He's the one who reveals the glory of the promised Redeemer. So Jacob got back to the house of God. Oh, today, let us hear that call to arise and to go back to the house of God, where we may once again be visited by the glorious tidings of the Redeemer. Not the promised Redeemer now, but the one who has come, and the one who is going to come again. So let us resolve to rest not upon some place, but upon the God of that place. May God grant that His Word will find its mark in every soul today for the glory of His name.